fishing. I'm going fishing, hook, sinker, and line.
Okay, boys and girls, moms and dads, okie dokie pokey, all the rest of the things you're going to say when you start a radio show. Yes, everything involved in that. We got a heck of a show for you today. And I guess I say that a lot, but I think this one's actually going to be pretty good. We got Fish and Frank here in the chair, Robert in the chair across from me. We got RJ in the control booth. And we got Jim, Mr. Rapala, here today. And we're going to be talking about fish. We're going to be talking about lures, hooks. I would guess we're going to talk about fishing stuff. It'll be a change. Something a little new and different.
Something unique.
Yeah. All right. I guess in the news front, we started the seminars at Fish and Frank's again in our new facility, and in the Fish and Frank's compound. Yes. I mean, you know, you wander from one room to the next, we go back to the South 40 to get the reels and rods nowadays, and off of that, we built a seminar area. We've got seating for 42 people with the table, and we did three seminars yesterday at 9:30, 2, and 6. The 9:30 was a bit nippy. You know, we had people going to stand in the sun. The 2 o'clock was awesome. And 6 o'clock last night, it was downright cold.
Yes, very.
Now, I know in Minnesota it's minus 19. But if you think about it, September, October comes around. It's been 80 degrees every day. And all of a sudden, it drops down to 60, 55. You got the jackets on. You got the boots. By January, when it hits 40 degrees again, you're out riding your motorcycle in your shirt sleeves. You got to get acclimated to that cold weather. And I don't think it takes years for your blood to thin out. I think it's just a matter of a few weeks. And I've got 40-some years of being down here. My blood is thin.
I don't yes.
know. Robert?
Right.
You're in the studio with a jacket on.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's too chilly for me. I got wool socks on, long pants on, and a jacket.
Yeah, we're not going to go into woods territory, so, but.
Yeah. Yeah, on the flip side, my wool socks are a year-round thing, though, so that's normal.
I'm wearing a wetsuit underneath my clothes.
Okay. Okay, Jim, Rapala's got some cool stuff. Dipping into the bass fishing front, a while back, I was going to take my dad over to Miami and then do some peacock bass fishing and do some largemouth fishing after that. And, you know, all of a sudden Jim calls me up and, hey, what are you doing? I tell him I'm going, taking my dad fishing. He says, I got a brand new lure you got to try. It's not even out yet. So he stops by the house, drops off this Rapala ripstop. And I swear I will never go freshwater fishing without one again. I caught more peacock, I caught more largemouth on it than any lure I've ever done. Now, I was not thrilled with it in saltwater. And I had a customer came in who was trolling in his boat and his buddy was using the Storm Twitch stick. And he was keeping up one for one with it, trolling in the canals, fish for fish. And if you can keep up to the Storm Twitch stick trolling in saltwater, that's a pretty big deal.
That's a bold statement.
Yeah. That's a bold statement to make. So I might have to rethink it. Now, what's your opinion on the ripstop, Jim?
Well, that's a whole new design on a hard bait. The nice thing about it is the paddle on the very back end of it, when you're cranking it, when you quit reeling your line, the lure will literally stop dead in the water, and it gives that sudden stop, and that's usually when you'll get your strike off the fish.
I was twitching it a lot. I mean, little yeah. short pulls, like 6-8-inch movements of the tip of my rod, and it would be twitch, 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 pause, twitch, 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 fish on.
Yeah.
I mean, it was literally almost that fast. I was catching a fish every second and third cast with it. Now, mind you, there was fish there, you know, but it was literally awesome. But I think it is that stop, that rear tail on it. It's got a lip on the back end of it, almost like a hard paddle tail.
Correct, and that's what makes it stop, hence the ripstop name. It would really, I would suggest trying it in a swimming pool or some very clear water, because as you're saying, you can twitch it. As you're cranking it, it has that tight wrap of the wobble, And when it stops, if you were to just kind of give it a nice jerk, it will literally turn all the way back around and go the opposite way. Gives that a fish to, oh, what's that?
Yeah, I mean, you're literally looking at enticing them into a reaction strike.
Reaction strike.
It's looking like wounded bait. It stops. It spins. You can do tricks with this thing that's basically impossible with a lot of lures.
A lot of other hard bait. You are correct.
So, one of the things about it is everybody's heard of Rapala, but that's not how you pronounce it, is it?
Rapala.
Rapala. Now, how did they get started? I mean, you were telling the story at the seminars yesterday, and I was kind of intrigued. I didn't know actually who started it, and this goes back decades.
Back in the 1930s, Laurel Rapala was fishing for his family. He was to put food, and he was basically a fisherman.
Kind of a commercial fisherman.
In Finland.
He would feed his family and sell fish to other people.
Correct. And he was sitting down on a boat one day, and he's sitting there watching the bait fish come up, and he would have to get up early in the morning to go out and catch all the bait fish so he could go out and catch the bigger fish so he could feed his family and sell fish at the fish market. And he got to watching the bait fish, and he went home one night, pulled out his knife and a piece of balsa wood, and started whittling away, got him the design he liked. Basically took a Hershey chocolate bar wrapper.
Now, didn't he take it out once before that?
Yeah, he did, and he needed to flash. He just, like, it needed something.
He took it out as balsa wood.
Yeah, it wasn't an overnight wonder. It took him a little...
You know, you go out, you drag... He was literally rowing a boat, trying to get the boat out there, dragging the lure, but it wasn't getting fish on it. And then he found the Hershey's candy bar.
Put that silver wrapper around it and gave it that flash to it. And later down the road, he's coming back in, and as all of his buddies are going out and catching bait, and he's already loaded up, and they're like, well, "What's going on here?"
So we got
to have one of those.
He's doing the lures. He's catching fish while the other guys are still catching bait.
And it took another 20, 30 years before it actually made it into the USA in the 50s.
And kind of the thing was, but that's how he started selling lures. The guys who were commercial fishing wanted him to make them the lures.
Correct.
And then he got, so he was making more money selling lures than he was selling fish. So he started out, and by the 1950s, it was the middle late of the 50s when the Rapala first came to the U.S. And because I'm from the Midwest, originally from there, I learned to say Rapala, but the family name is Rapala.
Rapala is the way they pronounce it.
What was his name again?
Laura,
and the family is Rapala. So if between us, we could say, okay, we're using a Rapala lure, but when you meet the family, you do want to remember it's Rapala because that is their name.
The nice thing about it, that was the original floater, and we still make that lure, and it is still one of our top-selling baits.
The original lure from the 1930s is still in production, still made out of balsa wood.
Still made a little more modern technique of wrapping and such than a candy bar wrapper. But, yes, it's still a number one seller of all the lures that we still make. The floating series is still, top sellers there.
Now, I grew up using the original Rapala series, and now when you get into lures... I'm going to break here for just a second. Robert, what is the trout fishing like right now? We should be loaded up with trout, are we?
No. Unfortunately, the trout fishing has still been really, really tough out there. The only moderate reports I've been getting have been Pine Island, Bull Bay, Turtle Bay, and a little bit up in Lemon Bay. Even the intercoastal has been a little bit quiet. It's very bizarre with the way the trout fishing is. The only thing I can say is talking to Danny the other day. He said that some of the places where he's been catching some 6 to 10 inch trout and seeing a lot of little trout swimming around. And so that tells me that the future might be a lot better, like next year's crop. But so far this year, it's been really way off.
Do we think the bigger trout are gone?
There's a lot of theories on it. I mean, there's been a few quality fish being caught out there, but I mean, I think this summer that some of our really big trout did get hurt pretty bad with some of the tide that was out there, but I think just this year might be a conglomeration or whatever, being low on the cycle of fish in conjunction with maybe some of the red tide making it appear to be a little worse than what it would normally be.
The other thing that happened is they opened up commercial year-round fishing to trout.
Yeah, so, I forgot about that. So yeah,
that'll certainly have an impact on it.
But you know, let me interject in this. I also do like to hunt a lot, and we have that same movement. About every 4 years, we have a really good year, and this has been a very, very down year for hunting for deer and such. That yeah, they're there, but not as many as the big right. that you've had some in the past 3 or 4 years. So, and that's what you know. A lot of the guys are saying, you know, this is a down year on the wildlife side. So that could also, you know, be going toward
fish. Could be
fish.
Factors with Irma, the hurricane that blew through a year ago, stuff, other stuff that happens. A lot of weather-related issues.
Right.
And also, where sometimes it boils down to, like we notice it with sheephead. If we have a great, great year on sheephead, everybody goes out, they're all catching them, they're all having sheephead dinner, they're just catching a whole bunch of them. The next year is usually pretty slow. Right. A lot of people go out looking for them, they don't find them, and so they kind of back off, and then the next year's kind of mediocre, but not a lot of people go, and then all of a sudden after that, and we have another big year, and so there is a 3 to 4 year cycle on a lot of these fish, because if there's not a lot of them around, people quit fishing for them, and then all of a sudden we get a bunch of fish back, and then go. But I'm not sure that's going to happen with the commercial industry still allowed to take the numbers they're going to take. Now, one thing that did happen is we're getting a lot less commercial guys because of no money for mullet.
Right.
With the mullet being at the lowest point almost in history on the price, a lot of people quit. And they're going out. You can make a lot more money pounding nails or wiring houses or, you know, going back to a lot of them are actually even attorneys and stuff. Their day job is paying better than the commercial fishing end of it. So we've lost quite a few commercial fishermen lately. So maybe that's going to help a little bit too.
Yeah, no, I can absolutely see that.
All right. Getting back, we were talking about the Rapala history and all that. Now, we just bought another Rapala we haven't carried before. And it's like the Smithwick Devil Horse. It's got the prop on the front and the back. And it's an X-Rap, right?
Rap-a-prop.
Okay. Speaking of, I'm going to go back into the lure thing here, but I'm going to delve in a little different. The original Rapala is a balsa wood lure. Still a wood lure. Now, X-Rap, some of the reason they're so good and they catch so many fish is because they have a balsa core.
Oh, actually, on the X-Rap products, they are it's a plastic polymer. The bait is a total plastic. It's in the shape of the balsa, but it's more durable because it is encapsulated plastic.
You can throw a tiny X-Rap at a monster fish. It stays together.
Correct.
They just don't break.
Much more durable.
Because now that's solid polymer all the way through. But now you do have the Balsa Extreme series.
That's the nice thing about that bait is it is a balsa bait. It's encapsulated completely with the X-Rap type hard plastic all the way around it, which makes it very durable. But also, you have the buoyancy of the balsa. So it will come up a lot quicker. It's not going to have that suspending.
To me, the balsa wood always is it's the way lures started, and yes. They still catch more fish than anything. We sell a ton of the Balsa Extreme, but I try and warn the guys, it's a balsa core on that. You've got an overlay of plastic, so it's strong, but it's not as strong as a solid core like an X-Rap.
I've not tried that. I'm not sure which way that even goes there.
Well, I see the guys with their broken lures.
Oh,
so
well, there you go.
I'm pretty sure they are. I got this 40-inch snook or this 45-inch fish and this and that. And it cracked the lure, broke it a little bit.
But the difference between it is that balsa is going to rise quicker to where your X-Raps are going to be a suspending. It's going to be a very slow rise because it doesn't have the balsa in it.
But with the balsa, it seems to catch more fish. But if you don't want to break your lures, back your drag down just a little bit.
Do everybody a favor, back your drags down.
Yeah.
They're on there for a reason.
If you back that drag down a little bit, you're not putting that... If you're used to fishing an X-Wrap, which will literally handle almost anything, you get into the balsa extreme, you are going to hook more fish with it. It's a little more pricey lure, but it really works. It's that balsa inside that makes it work. But having that, you can't horse it like you can.
Yeah, you need to back off a little bit on your drags. And I think overall anglers get a little anxious and they tighten their drags down a little bit too much. I mean, we go to this new braided line over mono now. We go to heavier line with smaller diameter. We're still using the same baits, and then they crank those drags down, and something's going to break, whether it's the tip of the rod, the line, the knot, the lure. And if you would just open up your drag, you would have less breakage down the road.
Well, I've seen a lot of lures over the years. Now, the one thing that stays true, and most of my trolling offshore, and is about using the Rapala baits because they track straighter. They're tested.
Tuned, tested, every one of them.
95% of them are going to run very true. Every once in a while, I get one that doesn't, but you can actually tune it back in. But going out here in the Gulf of Mexico, we have an opportunity to troll for grouper. And Robert, take a minute, tell me, how's the grouper bite out there right now?
Gag grouper, of course, it's closed, so it's doing great.
You can't keep them, so there's a gazillion of them. It's the day before hunting season, and there's deer everywhere.
Jumping out of the woods.
Right, it's the same concept. You know, the gag grouper have been tough all summer long. I mean, even out in deep water, they were having a hard time on them. But now in the past 2 weeks, I'm getting reports in the passes, even some of the docks up inside Lemon Bay with, you know, 24, 26-inch gag grouper on them. And then the near shore ledges and reefs in 30 to 50 feet of water are holding some nice sized gags on them. Now, and that's one of the few grouper that you can catch regularly while trolling a plug. Once in a while, a red grouper will hit a trolled plug, but you got to be real close to that structure for them to hit it.
Now, with the gag grouper, they have a thing where if something happens around, a noise happens, they don't run and hide in the structure. They go out away from the structure to open water to look around.
Yep.
So they're not, you do find them by the reefs, but it's not uncommon to find one 10 to 20 feet away from a reef, you know, because if something happens there, they go out to the open water, and which is a bit weird in a strange characteristic of the gag grouper versus a red grouper.
Right. Well, they're more of a predatory type grouper rather than red grouper are a little bit more of a ambush, sit and wait, lazy kind of hunter.
Yeah, okay. If it swims in front of my face, I'll eat it. If it doesn't, I don't know if I want to go over there to get it.
Right. Versus gag grouper, you know, they have that mottled pattern to them and they have that ability, and I don't know what the... In squid and octopus, it's like chromatophores or something like that that allow them to change colors instantly, but gag grouper and a lot of fish can lighten up or darken up their colors due to excitement, but gag grouper are very notorious for really lightening up their pigment, and they'll go out and sit in that washboard bottom outside the edge of the reef and really camouflage themselves in, and they have no problem swimming up 10, 15, even 30 feet off the bottom to come grab something that's going by that looks like food.
So that makes them a much more likely target for trolling.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Jim, if you're going to go out here in the Gulf, and let's say we got 40 feet of water, what would be your optimum trolling stuff?
Oh, and now we're still back into the XR series, but we make an XR Mag. And as you say, we're in 40, so I would suggest a XR Mag 40 that will throw a true 40 feet behind the back of the boat.
Now, XR 40... versus an XR 25. Why is one called a 25, one called a 30, one called a 40?
And once you get into your offshore baits like that, the number on the backside is the depth that that bait will run. So we have an XR Mag 15, a 20, a 30, and we now have the XR Mag 40. We also helped to fill that void. We came out with some Husky Mags in the 15 and the 25 foot range.
Now, what I do is I'll put down a 40, and a lot of people say don't use braid for trolling because they get broke off a lot. Well, there's a simple theory about trolling when you're using monofilament. Let's start with monofilament. When you're trolling a lure with monofilament, the fish hits, the line stretches, the rod bends, and then the drag on the reel gives. So if you're trolling with braided line, you're missing one-third of that. With mono, the fish hits, the line stretches, the rod bends, then the drag gives. But with braided line, the fish hits, the rod bends, and then the drag gives. So you're missing one-third of the equation. So you got to back that drag down a bit when that fish is going
to
strike.
Most definitely when you're using braid, you have to back off just a little.
Now, why would you use braid for this? Why am I going into that, Jim?
Braid's a smaller diameter per poundage. So instead of using a 30-pound mono, you can use a 30-pound braid, and it's going to have the equivalent of, what, about a 10-pound, I believe, Robert?
It's closer to about 6 or 8 pounds,
yeah.
Yes.
So you have a small, less resistant on your line.
Your line actually kind of acts like a parachute, keeping the lure from going to depth.
That is correct.
It comes from your rod all the way down through the water, attaches to the lure. The forward motion of the boat is setting up drag against that line, pressure, and it wants to lift the lure up. So the thinner a line you can go down. Now, I don't usually troll for group with anything less than 40-pound braid. 65, 50 is much more comfortable for me because if you do get a fish that hits really quick, like comes off the bottom and happens to hit it while going away from the boat, that's a tremendous jerk on there. And then if they kind of go down and there's any structure, I want a little thicker line just to be able to withstand some of that. But the idea is to set your drag where it just stops the lure. And there's no pressure on the fish. That's why a lever drag reel is very nice, because instead of using a star drag where you're spinning it and you really don't know how much you've turned it or how little you've turned it, with the lever drag, I can increase, go down to almost free spool, start slowing the lure down. Now, I'm going to let that lure go down, tag the bottom. How do you know it's going to hit the bottom or when it hits the bottom? Your rod will start to bounce a little bit. When that lure is down working correctly, the rod is bent and the tip is vibrating up and down because the lure is going side to side as the water deflects off the lip, which creates your rod tip to go up and down in a vibration. When you hit the bottom, there'll be a pause in that vibration and kind of a pop up to the rod. So I go about a quarter turn up from there. And a good idea on your reel is to hold your line right up by the first guide of your reel on your rod. I grab hold of the line and I turn the handle a full revolution. I start at 12 o'clock while I got my line pinched between my fingers. And as I turn the handle, I can see how many inches a full turn will get. Some reels are in the 20-some inch range. Some reels do in the 40-inch range. So knowing if you do a quarter turn, that reel's going to be 10 inches further up or 4 inches up. It's a big deal to know how far you're off the bottom. Once that lure hits the bottom, your rod starts bouncing, you want to do a quarter turn, maybe a half turn. On some reels, you're going to have to do a full turn. You really only want to be a couple feet off the bottom to get those grouper full potential.
Yeah, when you're fishing for grouper like that, you definitely want to touch that bottom every now and then just to make sure you know where that bait's down, where the fish are. You get into your pelagics and such, you want to get it up a little bit in free water. But for grouper, yes, you need to know where that bottom is and touch it every now and then just so you know your bait's down where the fish are.
And to get those other fish, start with a very deep one on the back right side of your boat. On the left side of the boat in the very back, put one, say you got a 40 down. So I'm going to go to a 25 on the other side. I'm going to put it out a bit farther back, and it will be up further in the water. So it's a bit farther back, a bit up. The lures can pass each other. If you hit a wave and the boat makes a sudden turn, they don't tangle as easy.
Correct.
And then I'll do another lure a little further back. And so I got a 40, I got a 25. My next lure will probably be something like 10 feet deep, 6 to 10. And then I've got one that almost stays right on the top, like a Williamson's bubble bait.
That's a perfect setup, Frank, because what you've done there is you've got that first bait down low, and sometimes you as Robert said, some of those fish will stay off of the wreck and such, and you got his attention. He might have missed that first bait, but he sees that next one or that third one coming, and it just looks more enticing to him.
And the trick to it is the farther up in the water column, the farther away from the boat. Now, I never put my one that runs as deep as possible in any of the forward rod holders, because if you turn, it's going so much straight down, the motor goes right into the line. I always use the farthest back rod holder for my deepest lures, avoiding the prop if the boat makes a sudden turn.
Then I put my shallower
ones up more forward in the boat, because they're further back, the lines are going further back, eliminating potential prop tangling with the lures. Now, by having the big one and then the next one's up, the next one up, the next one up, all going further back, that surface one, like the Williamson bubbles, and they got the smokers in them. I like using those up by the top because the water can go in the front, and then there are little holes in the side, and they come out blowing bubbles. Gets a little.
These are nice trail,
and it really does. But I kind of like that one just past the bubble trail of my boat.
Yeah,
where the prop wash is all coming out. I've got the ones down way below the prop wash, leading all the way up into it, and then that last one right near the surface is kind of peeking out of the edge of that prop wash with its own little smoker trail on it. Very, very effective.
Now, I think another really good point about when trolling out here that a lot of people do have to kind of get used to, especially if you get your wintertime guests down, they're used to trolling the Great Lakes, and a lot of them do use mono, which is fine. If you've already been trolling with mono using one of these depth-specific lures of a 40, let's say, you kind of have an idea on how much line to let out. But with the braided line, the cool part about it is that, one, you don't have to let out as much line to get it to go to depth.
So if you're using mono, really, if you slow down a little bit and let out more line, that lure will go down a lot deeper.
Mm-hmm.
People think if you go a little faster, a little deeper. Yeah. The problem is as you're pulling it with the boat, you're also pulling it up. So as you're trying to troll that, the faster you go, the more you're lifting those lures up in the water column. If you slow down to about 2.5 miles an hour, you can literally get those lures to drop even further, a little extra line out. You could probably get a 25 to hit the bottom in 40 feet of water.
Right. But the same way with braid, too. You get the same effect with less line out.
Correct.
You know, you just slow your speed down and get those. I mean, we got one gentleman that's been buying a couple of those 40s, and he's getting at the bark bottom in 55 to 60 feet of water and been pulling up some good quality fish. You know, the only thing he does is he's actually using about a 10-foot mono leader on there just for that little added stretch when he does do that deeper depth of water. It just makes him feel a little bit more comfortable. When the fish hits in with the braid line, you've got so much extra line capacity out there. You're fishing open water. Let those fish swim a little bit. So do fight them with that lighter drag. And also, that being said, the trolling part of it.
Now, once the fish is on and you're actually into the fight, you can increase that drag to fight the fish.
Right.
It's for that before you actually have the rod in your hand that you're going to run into problems.
Right.
So what you want to do is have that drag set nice and, you know, barely enough so when the fish hits, he'll get a little bit of a hook set, but he's not going to break anything. Now, once the rod's in my hand, I can control it. So I'm fighting with the fish. I might drag a little bit looser, and if it's a spinning rod, I can put my fingers on the spool to slow it down, give me a little extra drag when I'm pulling up, but I can release immediately.
Right.
If it's a conventional, I'm using my thumbs up against the reel to help give me a little extra power rather than just increasing the drag. So I'll put my thumb on there, pull up, lift my thumb, reel down, put my thumb on, pull up. But the nice part about that is if the fish, I feel him start to jerk, I just release my thumb, he can take extra line.
Awesome technique, Frank, awesome. And a lot of people need to try that because that is it puts a lot of pressure on that fish without tightening that drag down. And it's so quick to release it to give your drag or your reel to work back again.
If you're trying to adjust the drag levers or knobs, you're going to go too loose, too tight. But if your fingers, you have so much quick reaction with that. Now, we sell a $2 little leather patch. It's got a couple little elastic things on it. That's only reason it has in life is to help you, you know, put your thumb on a conventional reel and not burn yourself.
Oh, man, just do it once and get it over with.
Stick your thumbs down on that reel and watch the skin burn.
Just take that fingerprint right off. Yeah. Now, another part about
this. You can go out and rob banks and safe things. You won't have any fingerprints.
Right. The other aspect of trolling, too, that people often forget is it's two parts. Once you hook a fish, you should hit your, was it the man overboard button?
Over.
So you can mark your spot where you were at, because gag grouper will leave that reef anywhere from 10 feet to sometimes even 100 feet. And so that way, once you've realized and landed your fish and you realize it is a gag grouper, you can go back to that area and start doing small, tight circles to see if there's a patch of reef there or a small ledge in that general vicinity, because you might not have saw it as you went over it.
Pick up your brother.
You missed it by 10, 20, 30 feet. You know, and if you miss it by 10 feet, you missed it by a mile.
So the trick would be is you hit that man overboard when the fish hits.
Mm-hmm.
And then you come up, you get him up, it's a gag grouper. You didn't see anything on your bottom machine, but you know there's a reef close. So you go back to that point, stop the boat, turn the wheel as far as you can to the left or right, start idling as slow as possible in circles, and hopefully coming over that reef, you can mark it. Now you can get the red grouper off the reef.
Right.
Because the gag grouper told you he was nearby.
Right. And that's a lot. And this trolling technique is a great way to go out and find all these new spots. Because when we talk about somebody who's, you know, you get your friend that says, well, I only went out 8 miles and I caught my legal catch of gag grouper or red grouper. And you're like thinking, how do you do that? You know, and he found those spots probably by trolling and has that as a secret spot. Because that ledge might only be 20 feet long of exposed bottom, or it might be simple as three cinder blocks that somebody threw over 30 years ago that
could
he
be
just stumbled across.
Deck chair off a boat fell down.
Yeah, I mean,
started
hurricane
growing
debris
stuff.
Floats down current from us. There's a lot of Irma debris that's been slowly floating down over the.
Could be the roof of somebody's house laying out there. You don't know.
Yeah, so that's how these guys find these secret spots of theirs out there that are close to shore, even far offshore, that aren't marked. You know, that trolling is a perfect way to gain your own knowledge and your own personalized little spots for a while.
Okay. Now, sharks. This is not the time of year I think about shark fishing. The water's too cold. Literally, it would take a fish 1 to 2 days to be in Key West if he left Boca Grande Pass.
Correct.
It's like 120 miles.
Mm-hmm.
And people say, oh, it's 120 miles. That's a long ways. Well, you got nothing to do all day but swim, and let's say you're going along at 3 miles an hour. In 10 hours at 3 miles an hour, you went quite a ways.
Right. Yeah, and sharks have to constantly swim in order to stay alive, so 3 miles an hour, no big deal to them. That's us walking.
Yeah, you know? So, you know, in an hour you went 3 miles and 6 miles, and I mean, it just goes exponentially.
Average person walks like 2.5 miles an hour. Average person.
So,
walk.
So, you know, a fish could easily make 5 miles an hour, and that's only 20 hours to go 100 miles.
Yeah.
So
the sharks are here a little tiny bit, because we do have that small influx that goes in little spurts of the sandbar sharks that move in from way offshore. And they'll move to the nearshore beaches, sometimes the nearshore reefs, and every now and then they'll even come into the harbor. But it's so inconsistent that it's not really a targetable fish. You know,
now,
it's just
I heard about a little
accident.
Bit down off the bottom of Sanibel, like Turner Beach and down in there, some of the sandbar sharks. Now, is sandbar the only shark that we can have in this cold water?
No, you can always have an occasional bull shark or an occasional black tip, and this time of year during the winter time, sometimes what everyone calls a spinner shark can actually be a spinner shark this time of year. Because the rest of the year, January, February, and March, if you call it a spinner shark, it's a possibility. The rest of the year, it's 99% of the time a black tip, because black tips jump the same as a spinner shark. People just think it jumped.
On the notes that you gave me about the show, there's literally three or four places with the name of a shark written on it. I'm going, Okay, think of a shark with a pretty hat, Robert. Are they in it this time of year?
Yeah. I haven't heard much about them at all this week.
I'm looking at the notes here, and I'm seeing bonnet, bonnet, bonnet. And I can't get you to say the name of it. I'm trying to be like, oh, gee, I don't know what he's going to say. But you wrote the note, man. What's going on with the bonnet sharks?
That's a week and a half ago note.
It was for Tuesday.
For Tuesday?
This was for Tuesday. This is stuff you wrote me for the seminars that we didn't use.
Hey, do I have to intervene here?
Sure, go for it.
What's the next topic?
Yeah, there you go.
I'm like,
I haven't. The bonnet heads have been sporadic.
Ding, 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 ding. Time to give away a prize.
I could be wrong. This one does have Christmas stuff on it. So, okay.
Yeah.
All right, I'll throw these notes away.
It's the bottom of your truck. Who knows how long it's been in there for?
Yeah, that's true. So easy a caveman could put it in there. Yeah, I might drive my trucks a little too long. Okay. All right. Getting to the notes you did right now. Jim, do you have some wonderful news about... Oh, you know, Lure Jensen makes a spoon. I think it's pretty cool. Now, I don't think it's much of a flat spoon. Because if I was going to throw one of the lures back on the flats, it's going to be a wider spoon, like a strobe. You guys sell a strobe spoon.
Yes, they make a strobe spoon.
Now, that's kind of like an inexpensive Johnson Sprite. It's very wide, and you can reel it very slowly in the shallow water. The wider, the more breadth the spoon has, the slower you can reel it without it sinking. It'll give a little more lift to it. Now, the narrower the spoon is, the more it's going to drop in the water, you're going to give a little more, be a little quicker with it, which is usually a good thing for spoons. But I like the one that has the treble hook on it, but it also has a single hook that comes in the package, so you can go back and forth with it. It's one of the crocodiles.
Yeah. The crocodiles do it, and strobe, I believe, all come with trebles, but you're correct. The wider spoons are perfect this time of year because you need to slow down because of the colder water, because the fish are slower. And the crocodiles, and then you got your crippled herrings, which are your lead weights that are
so
more
there
percussive.
Is actually lead spoons and like metal. Most spoons, what we think of are a flattened metal that have a bend to them in one way or another. But there is actually spoons that have a lead base in them, so you can do a very small,
like a crippled herring. Yes, you can get down to a quarter ounce up to
and
2 ounces.
Tiny.
Yeah, they're tiny, and they're great for the mackerel and the kingfish. You know, well, you can get out and cast to them or such.
Any fish that's keying in on glass minnows, anchovies, the little tiny baits, they're not looking for that 6-inch spoon.
That's when you want to go to your crocodiles and such, because they're a little bit lighter weight, and you can get them down to a 30 seconds. Yeah, you are correct.
But even the crippled herrings being made out of lead, they can be much smaller than a stamped-out metal spoon and get a good distance with them, but still be small enough to get those fish that are eating those bay anchovies and all that interested in eating that.
Correct.
Without being oversized. The hard thing to do when you're in the Gulf of Mexico doing bonita, blackfin tuna, all that, is being able to stay far enough away from the school to cast to them without spooking them, but you know they're only going to eat that little tiny bait. That's why we use a lot of pompano jigs and stuff like that. But the crippled herring being made out of lead, you can throw that small thing a mile and still get
fish. It's nice to always have a rod rigged with one like that, because if you come across the bait fish that are jumping up, you can cast to it and not get in and spook that school down and see what you might pull out of what's feeding on it.
All right, well, I'm going to put you on the spot here.
Wouldn't be the first time.
Yeah, you guys... the Rapala brands are Rapala, Storm,
Lure Jensen, Williamson, BMC, Blue Fox.
Now, one of the things most people don't realize, 8 out of 10 lures come with BMC hooks. We have a big wall of BMC hooks in the store. It's become our best-selling line, but people are used to hearing Mustad or Eel Claw or whatever. They're not used to hearing VMC, even though VMC makes lures or hooks for almost everybody.
VMC, not only do we use VMC on all of our baits, whether it's a Storm or Rapala or a Lure Jensen, VMC is the world's oldest hook manufacturer, It's still made in France. And we make a lot of OEM. We do all the hooks for Yuzuri, Mirler, High Rollers, and it goes on and on. There are a lot of proprietary hooks. They ask for us to make a certain hook the way they want it, certain size and such, that you can't just buy anywhere else. But it is a BMC. If you walk into a shop, close your eyes into a wall of plugs and lures, and just pick one off, 80% of the time, it's made with a BMC hook.
So BMC isn't... People think, oh, well, this is a new hook, and they just came out. But the owner's name is what, Cyril?
No, Cyril's the manager for USA.
The manager. Okay. Because I met Cyril and a bunch of these other folks. Really nice people there at BMC.
Correct.
And it's rapidly become our number one line of hooks because they sell for a little less money, and there's two or three very premium brands. They're almost identical. And the VMC is a little less money and a little less shiny, but it sells for a lot less money.
And we make different, we make a black nickel hook. We make a permasteel hook. We've came out with the new Coastal Black finish. It makes it it's a black nickel hook, but it's got a coating that makes it five times more salt resistant. And it just, you're not having to buy as many hooks.
You're literally, with that Coastal Black, you're getting us closer to what people would always wish for, that stainless steel hook, but they're just not made anymore.
Correct.
So the closest thing to getting something that's not going to corrode is the Coastal Black.
Well, I'm not going to say anything won't corrode.
No, but they're going to corrode.
But it's going to be five times more salt resistant from corroding, yes. And it's just like taking care of your tackle and your gear, your rods and reels. Nice, clean water. Rinse down at the end of the day will help prolong the life of all of your gear.
All right, now, you a circle hook guy or J-hook guy?
I like a circle hook.
You like circle
hook? I like a circle hook.
Robert, J-hook or circle hook?
J-hook.
J-hook. RJ, J-hook or circle
J-hook.
J-hook.
That
I'm a J-hook.
Robert.
So
Frank,
we have one circle here. I'm not sure. Now,
how did he get in here?
Who
invited him?
Why did we let you in? I'm not even sure. All right, explain yourself, sir. What's with the circle thing?
I was just going to say y'all like jerking the rod more than I do.
Yeah, well.
Well, it's a matter of preference.
If you got a little beer in a left hand, you're pretty much guaranteed.
The circle hook, I mean, we adopted it where you have to use circle hooks over some reefs and such now, but once you start using the technique, and I just like it.
Is it because it's so simple that appeals to you?
It's simple.
Is it because you don't have to think?
You don't even have to set the hook. Just reel.
I'm beginning to find out that, yes, you are Mr. Rapala, but you could oversimplify.
I can't even say the words.
I'm trying to be nice. All right. Anyway, let's switch over to freshwater. Robert, how's the crappie bite?
It's been really good locally. If you're planning on traveling to one of the lakes, I'm going to say not too good. But locally, you know, in the Rotunda Canals and Northport Canals, Port Charlotte Canals, getting a lot of good mixed reports of crappie. You know, they're catching them from the bank. Some guys are slipping their John boats or their canoes or kayaks down into some of the local canals and doing even better. But I'm hearing not great numbers, but a little bit better quality fish, 13, 14-inch crappie. Weird part is a lot of the reports from mixed people, both on the Big Lake, Okeechobee, and some of the other lakes, and even the canals, more than half of them aren't even with eggs right now. And December and January are the two prime months where they're usually loaded with eggs.
Now, did they already spawn, or are they going to spawn?
They aren't seeing eggs in them, so I'm assuming they already spawned, because you should at least see some developing eggs if they're about ready to go into a spawn.
So you think the spawn's already passed?
In some areas, I think. It's weird. You know, I've heard that from bow shiner guys and several customers that have been over to Okeechobee that they've been catching crappie over there. Empty bellies, period. And then a couple customers locally, that one guy was fishing in the Rotunda Lakes, and then the other guy was fishing in a couple of the Deep Creek canal or ponds. He said no row at all in his few crappie that he caught. They were good crappie, but not a bit of row in any of them.
I think they ran earlier this year, too, didn't they?
I think they might have, because it's just a little strange.
Because we've been selling literally pounds upon pounds, thousands of minnows, for a few months now.
Yeah.
And we thought it was going to be a late season, because really the temperature didn't drop. But boy, when it dropped like a rock.
Yeah, it big time. And I think that might have been the thing, is that maybe they did kick off a month or two early than what everyone was anticipating. I don't know.
Yeah, I heard a lot of nice catches all the way back in November, which was early.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we have Jim, Mr. Rapala here. So you've got all these different brands under the Rapala brands. What would you choose out of all your lures to go catch crappie?
You know, we got to make a couple that I really like to do. We make a bangtail, which makes it kind of like a, if anybody's ever used a rooster tail type look, it's an inline spinner.
Well, what I like about the bangtail, if you go in the store, guys, there's some rooster tails down low on the wall. They cost a dollar more than the bangtail, and I can't tell the difference between the two, honestly.
Yeah,
I can sell them for a dollar less.
And we can go down to a 32nd, up to a quarter, 3/8 size on them, you know, depending on how depth and what kind of distance you want. Another nice lure I like to use is our new VMC bucktails jigs. If you can tip those with the minnows, they're very, very productive for a crappie.
Oh, you're using the actual jigs and putting a minnow on the jig.
Correct.
Now, I used to use those little tiny Rapala, the balsa wood, the little tiny ones for a lot of my panfish. I don't even know what size they are. They're like literally an inch.
That's about an 05 size you're showing me there.
Literally a little bitty.
We make actually two of them. We go down to an 05 on the CD, which is a countdown minute. You throw it out, and you can basically count it down per second. You know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and you're at 5 foot depth and start reeling it in. Or we also even do our floater we were talking about earlier, all the way down to an 05.
And that floater, the one I like the best, has kind of got a little bit of yellow on the back, but has a red bill. Now, that's been one of my favorites because of all the Oscars and what's that?
Mayan
cichlids. They're so colorful when they're little. They're
beautiful.
Actually bright colored when they're little tiny ones. And so many of the fish, because there's so many of them, are keen in to eat those. You know, that's their food when those fish are tiny. And I think that's why that red bill, and it's got some bright yellow on it, I have no idea what the color is called. But I've used it very successfully for a lot of the panfish and all that.
Yeah, I know it's over 24 different colors, and it's for that reason, because you've got people wanting to use them for crappie or for the cichlids or whatever.
Well, actually, I'm not actually trying to catch the tilapia or cichlids, but I think it looks like them babies.
Yes.
I'm actually trying to catch the crappie or even peacock bass I've used it on, because I think it's a color they're beginning to associate with food.
Mm-hmm.
You know how black and black back with the silver sides, the way Rapala initially introduced lure, traditional what we think of as bait colors, but there's so many of the Mayan cichlids, so many of the tilapia, so many of the Oscars have come into this area, and they're bright colored. So I've been using this weird red-lipped yellow back.
Well, I know exactly. I do not recall the color number or the color name, but I know exactly the bait you're talking about.
But I'm not using it trying to catch those fish. I'm using it because it looks like them when they're babies, and I think that's more enticing in a lot of things than the black and silver, because I think in some instances there's more of them than there is the regular fish. Robert, what about the snook fishing right now? Is that any good?
Well, there's been a lot of snook out along the intercoastal. I've been hearing some pretty good reports of little groups of fish, and some spots even up to 30 fish sitting under some docks around Little Gasparilla and heading up into Lemon Bay along the Miserable Mile, and some 30 and 40-inch fish being caught. They are super, super sluggish. They're eating mostly shrimp, but they are spooky, so you got to really go slow and be really aware of what you're looking at, because they're just sitting there almost stationary to the point where you swear it's a log until you get too close to it, and then it slowly wanders away and flips you the fin.
Now, what I'm hearing about redfish is there's a ton of redfish on the east side, but most of them are small.
Right, yeah.
And if you go way back 3, 4, 5 islands away from where the boats run on the open flat there, if you get back 3, 4, 5 islands back in there, could catch some bigger fish there as far as redfish go.
Yeah, talking to Fish the other day, he said that's where he's been getting some of his bigger redfish have been, in some of those little bit further out of the reach places. And then a few mixed reports of some legal, what would normally be legal size
redfish and snook are out of season right now, boys and girls can't keep them. You can keep anything else. They're the only two fish out of season. I don't want to hear everything in Florida's closed. There's only two fish
catch
closed.
And release.
Right.
But
they're catching
out in the intercoastal, there's a ton of big redfish
big
out
oversized.
In the ICW. Big oversized redfish, which is kind of weird.
Yeah. Usually you get mixed reports of one here, one there for like a week or two sometimes in the middle of winter. But we're going on 3-4 weeks of this with one dock holding 10 fish in the 30-inch range, then another dock holding 20 fish in the 28-30-inch range. It's all over the map and pretty quality numbers.
Behind Sanibel, behind Captiva, behind Gasparilla Island, behind Cayo Costa, go all the way on up the coast until you get up towards Venice. Then those big redfish don't seem to be underneath as much as those docks once you hit Lemon Bay.
Right.
It really seems to be kind of,
almost
I would say,
Tom
the
Adams Bridge.
Yeah, the inside of Gasparilla Island has got a lot of big redfish on it. And then as you get down towards Sanibel, you kind of get a lot less. There's not as much going on down there.
Right.
But the epicenter would be Cayo Costa and Gasparilla Island as far as for the inside. As you go further north, you get less. As you go further south, you get less. But for some reason or other, the inside of those islands are really cranking it up.
Pretty impressive.
And now, Jim, there is a lot of stuff out there, soft plastic. But I'm kind of impressed with the Storm GT, that 360. It's got a rattling jig head in it.
At GT 360. Yes, we actually make two versions. On the rattling jig head, it's a search bait. It does have small BB type. And it, besides the Rockport Rattler, it's the only jig on the market that actually rattles like that.
So, and you can actually buy the heads. What I like about them is we've got the GT heads with a lip on them. This time of year, if you're going to put a big paddle tail on, you can put a lip head on it. So as you reel it, you're going to get a little bit of wobble side to side, plus that big thump out of the paddle tail. So you can give them more slow, steady retrieve and get a lot of action. We've got the, basically, they've got the, with the rattles in the head, and then they have the weedless ones where they got the weed guard on them.
Yes.
And there's not a lot of brands putting the weed guards on them anymore. So I was kind of impressed with that Storm. But we're going to have to wrap this up, boys and girls. This is Fish and Frank here. Jim, any last word?
Tight lines.
Okay. We got Jim there. Robert, what do you got?
Go out and have a good time and enjoy the nice weather while
say
you
goodbye,
can.
RJ.
Goodbye, RJ.
Bye, boys and girls. Fish and Frank. We gone.
Boy, I'm going fishing just to ease my